What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
And right now, in New Orleans, Louisiana, the drive is live.
The drive is live.
There it is. Hell, there's T-Mill. T-Mill, one more day. One more day, Tyler will be back. But our guy, Chris Santiago, has been holding us down. He has got the ones and twos for us. And it's a good time as we are back here. The drive live again, Radio Row here in New Orleans, doing our thing. It'll be a fun show. As we try to bring the sights and sounds to you of this big game. Clint's in the building. As I said, you can catch us on YouTube and Twitch, where you can see us all. You can catch us as well on and get involved on the show on the text line 713-572-4610. So it sounds like you see that that's what happens, Clint.
What happens? Some
grown ass men and people try to corner us. And try to corner some grown-ass men and some things. You ain't going to get us. You ain't going to get us. You ain't going to get us. Now, like I said, I would like to hear what Sean had to say, but you ain't going to get us. You ain't going to get us, baby. We handle this thing like gentlemen. We're gentlemen out here, baby. We're gentlemen. I know you asked me to get back home and get that pan clean, though. It was a good time.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess that Seth wanted to use that pan, and it wasn't clean.
Might have.
I sure hope it wasn't just a moseying through the kitchen and finding something to complain about. I sure hope it.
No, I
left that at the house. Huh? Oh, okay. Yeah. That's sweet of him.
That's sweet of him. But no, man, it's fun. We are having a great time with the whole crew. It's been a real good time, and then we'll continue to do that thing. I do want to start here, though, Clint, and – we'll get to some of the Astros news that's coming out. Big game last night with the Rockets, and we'll discuss that. But I want to see where you are right now. All right, man, it's now 24 hours exactly removed from the big news of Nick Caley. And I know many people around here may have been disappointed in your reaction to it, some had the same reaction. All right, I just wanted – you had a little sleep on it. You had a little wine last night, I assume.
No wine.
Damn.
No wine.
I saw a bottle in there. I thought maybe you tipped it up. You know,
straight to bed, man.
Did your thing. You got to hang out and see some old teammates. Listen to Jalen Hurts. Listen to some guys around.
Yeah, enjoyed
last
it.
Night. But you had some time. You've woken up. Where are you at now? On the OC hire, have you had some time to breathe, think about it, and look at it. Where are you at now? Are you feeling any different? You feeling any better about it? You feeling any more optimistic about the move?
Not better, not more optimistic. It's still a wait and see, and that's not going to change day to day. That is, I'm not one to bring the trust D'Amico, trust Nick, you know, to the table. For me, that's just. I mean, I might as well say I don't have an opinion. I don't. It doesn't matter to me, right? To me, it is a huge risk at a time when the organization is. You can argue in two of the most critical years that the Texans could have for the next 10 years, assuming that C.J. Stroud works out and is the quarterback that's making $60 million a year or more moving forward. So, yeah, it's a huge risk. There's a ton of unknown, and we'll see how it all works out. We'll see what kind of guy Nick Caley is. We'll see if we're talking about identity week 9. You know, we'll see if we're talking about, oh, man, that's a poor performance, but guys just have to execute. You know, if that's the kind of stuff that we continue to get, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Now, I know as you mentioned yesterday, more wait and see. Let's see what happens.
Absolutely.
Let's see what happens. This recent news about one of his former players, Cooper Kupp, coming out and saying he's been informed that the Rams by the way, the Rams, and they go, hey, they get what they need out of you, and then they go ahead and push you on, man.
Move you on.
They move you on.
Move on down the street.
Jared Goff got me to a Super Bowl. Get on. How long ago was it? Was that 3 years ago? Cooper Kupp was the Super Bowl MVP, and he had that great year. Nah, man, get on, man. We done with you. And he is 31, getting up in age, and his play has dropped back. But what if Nick Caley can help? Maybe facilitate maybe him coming here. Maybe that's a thought. Because the Texans are, with Tank's injury, the Steph Diggs thing, they're in the market for a receiver. I saw the last Daniel Jeremiah did his mock draft, and he had the Texans drafting a receiver in the first round. What if he's able to facilitate and help bring in Cooper Kupp? Is that something that potentially changes things for you moving forward with a Nick Caley?
Absolutely.
If he can bring that to the table.
If Nick Caley can bring guys in the caliber of Cooper Kupp and then plug them into his offense and those guys go out there and help us win games, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And this is one of those, to me, that's big enough with Cooper Kupp to where if you can look D'Amico and Nick in the eye and say, hey, I know there's been some injuries the last couple of years, but I'm telling you, I've been in a building with this guy day in, day out, and there is a lot of tread left on the tires. This is a guy that you would love to have in the building as it pertains to dealing with your quarterback and in the wide receiver room. A lot of the similar stuff that we've heard about Steph Diggs and back in the day it was Brandon Cooks. Like a lot of that stuff. Can he give us the inside on, which he should be able to, he's been in the building with him, on what Cooper Kupp is all about legitimately. And then, obviously, if you get him here, you use him the right way. You plug him in, and he's an impact player. Yeah, that would be, for me, that would be a big plus. Cool, absolutely. You're talking about building a resume and adding to
– You'd be into Cooper Kupp? You'd be into that move?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. I like what Cooper Kupp brings to the table. Look, the conversation is going to start with the injuries the last couple of years. I mean, he's lasted 12 games the last couple of years. I think he had 9 games the year before that. So the injuries have been a problem since he won the Super Bowl MVP and had to earn the triple crown at the wide receiver position, over 1,900 yards receiving and 100 and some odd catches. And I mean, it was a hell of a year. He led in catches, yards, and touchdowns. Since then, injuries have been a problem. But if you look at his numbers and kind of forecast them, I mean, from a hit 100 catches this year. I mean, you forecast those numbers and boy, over if he
was healthy. They're just saying.
What's that?
You said he would have 100 catches.
How many catches did he have this year?
Let me check on Cooper Kupp.
I got it right here.
I think the age is what the concern may be from others, but 31, and as you said, the injury thing. But to me, the Cooper Kupp situation is one where I like. He had 66.
Yeah, 100 targets. I was looking at my screen wrong. 100 targets, 67. 67 catches in 12 games, 700 yards, and 6 touchdowns. That is extremely productive. And if you forecast that out, he would have over 100 catches. And you'd have over 1,000 yards, and you'd have 10 touchdowns. Obviously, the injuries are the first problem there, right? But the get past the injuries, and this dude's productive when he's healthy.
Yeah, like if you're missing it, we're talking about Cooper Kupp, who has been. It's been informed to him that the Rams are searching to trade, and you think it would make sense they go to the AFC, and this is a team that would need it, and he is clearly and obviously. Has some connections and ties to the OC. I like the Cooper Kupp thing as long as you're being realistic. Obviously, there's going to be a risk with Cooper Kupp because of the injury thing. But if you're realistic on what you're getting and you're not expecting the Cooper Kupp who won the Triple Crown and you know led the yep. league in catches, yards, and touchdowns and had that amazing season and was Super Bowl MVP, if you're expecting the guy that is a strong two – on this team, if he could stay healthy, you can look at it. I mean, he's gone from that crazy year of 1,947 yards to 812, 737, 710. Of course, injuries have played a role in that, but he would be the perfect complement to Nico Collins, and he would be a really good friend, as you know, to the quarterback, where he plays and where he works in the middle of the field. It would be a great help. So if they could pull that off, if they could get him, and Nick Caley can be instrumental on bringing a Cooper Kupp in, as long as, I said, you are not thinking of the Cooper Kupp where you're like, oh, we're got. I think that was a bit of an issue, I think, for some with Steph Diggs. I think some people were looking at Steph Diggs and like, oh, that dude that was a four-time, you know, four-time all-pro, pro bowler, all of that.
Yeah.
No, you got to look at him in the frame of a compliment to your one, which we know is Nico.
Well, look, this is not a situation with Diggs then, or which some of us thought it was, me included. But like, this is not a situation where you should ever expect that, right? Clearly, look, you got to acknowledge the injuries, as I mentioned. The cap hit has to be adjusted, whether it's on the front end by the Rams in some kind of trade, or it's Cooper Kupp willing to renegotiate his contract. I mean, the next 2 years are too expensive to pay for what you could fairly expect to get out of Cooper Kupp. There's 2 years left on his contract, and there it's a big number. It's a big number.
He's not gonna go for that.
So the Cooper Kupp conversation is not. I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, anybody that's done any kind of thinking around Cooper Kupp being an option for a Texans team, it's more along the lines of you're looking for a 100 catch guy, you're looking for a 1,000 yard guy, you're looking for a guy that can clearly still separate in the red zone when it's the most difficult to separate and has a knack for getting the ball in the end zone. And if he can stay healthy, you could get one of them 1,200-1,400 yard game years. You could get one of them 10 touchdown plus seasons. You can get, again, you can get 100-110 catch season out of that guy. He's still a number two behind Nico Collins, and the conversation, injuries, he has to stay healthy, contract that has to be renegotiated, yeah. And is he a guy that the NFL views as a player that can go somewhere and be a one? I don't know what the market looks like for him. I have no idea, right? The articles that I read today had five teams, none of them being the Texans, but it was all him playing second fiddle to CeeDee Lamb, second fiddle to George Pickens, you know, being one of many up in Baltimore potentially. With the Buffalo Bills, obviously he would have a kind of a one of a three-headed monster there with their receiving
corps. He still wouldn't be a one there either. I think, like, clearly, it wouldn't be just like, all right, this is our go-to guy. Yeah, as you're saying, like.
Yeah, it would be more of a three-headed monster of guys that they're just going to spread the football around. Yeah, the conversation for me as it pertains to the Texans is no way, shape, or form about he's going to be a one. The injuries would bother me if I didn't have Nico Collins, right? The salary, the cap hit is going to bother me big time because I have Nico Collins, and I'm looking for a two-type receiver. But the reality of it is, when he's healthy, he's productive.
Yeah, I think the Texans can go many different ways to fill.
Yeah.
That because I think, as I said, with the up in the air with Diggs. Hell, they could bring Diggs back if they wanted to. But the up in the air with Diggs and the Tank Dell situation where he could miss all of next year with that gruesome injury he had, they're going to have to add something there. I think it's going to be more than John Metchie and Hutchinson. They're going to add something there. They could do a lot of things. It could be a Cooper Kupp. It could be a free agent. They could bring back Diggs. It could be in the draft, younger, wherever. From the person texting in, no Cooper Kupp, give me T. Higgins. Yeah, I don't think they're doing that. I don't think they need to. All right. I think they have their one. I don't think T. Higgins is looking to come to somewhere and be like, yeah, let me run into another Ja'Marr Chase situation where I'm competing. I think he wants to be the clear cut one. And I think that'll be super, super expensive. I think they would go in a different route. But Nick Caley could play a part in that, right? I do think Cooper Kupp, you know, as you see it, I think he has a great relationship with the organization, and I think he may have some. I'm not going to say he's going to be able to make the decision, but I think they may have some input from him on places he would like to go. There may be a deal of, hey, Cooper, what are the places you'd like to go? And maybe he puts out and tries to get the best deal there.
Look, here's the thing is if you look at Cooper Kupp, and whether he's making the call or not, like, Houston has to be a destination. You've got a pocket passing quarterback that is as receiver friendly as anybody in the league when he's right. You've got a number one, so the expectations aren't going to be for you to go out there and lead the crew. You've got a face that you're familiar with that is, hell, if you're as high on Nick Caley as Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans are, you would want to be here with a familiar face, a guy that knows how to use you, a guy that you have great chemistry with, and a guy that you have a lot of confidence in. So, I mean, to me, it would be very difficult for Cooper Kupp to want to be somewhere other.
Or at least this would be an option.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, there's some really good teams out there that are going to be interested in Cooper Kupp potentially. And so I'm not sitting here telling you that the Texans are the best overall team, because, as I said, Buffalo, Baltimore, there's some really good teams that are probably going to be in the mix for Cooper Kupp. But when you look at long term, like, Cooper Kupp's got to hit a lick the next 3 or 4 years. Like, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to play well. Where's that opportunity going to be? And how quickly can you get to a point where you're playing well? Where can you play indoors? Where can you not swing from, not that he has to, but you swing from L.A. to Buffalo. That's some pretty different playing conditions a good chunk of the season. So, I just think you'd be hard-pressed. And I don't know Cooper Kupp, but I think you'd be hard-pressed for Cooper Kupp to find a better, more friendly Cooper Kupp-friendly situation to get into than Houston.
Yeah. Text line coming through. What happened about that parking pass? Well, we'll get to the bottom of it. I am really intrigued. Figgy cut me off as I'm walking through. Hey, you hear Sean this morning? I said, okay, I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to hear it. Chris, you going to have that for me? I'm going to need that. Look, Chris, you going to have that for me, Big C? I'm going to need that from you.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, look at it. Oh, nonchalant. Hey, by the way, I noticed you ain't text me no more after that game got a little tight. After that game, but hey, Chris on that bet. Chris had the
well, you see the reason. The reason why is because y'all don't reply. So I'm just like, if y'all don't reply,
oh,
no text.
No, I replied.
No, you didn't.
I replied.
No, you
I replied. I believe in my heart, I did.
No,
I replied on the first one,
mm-mm.
And then that plus six and them text stopped coming through.
Nah,
he said they up 10.
I told you it was plus 6.5, and they covered. They covered that plus 6.5. So
you did say 6.5.
Did he say 6.5? Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought it was 6. Are you had the hook on there. Okay, well, there you go. You made it then. All right. I was going to say, I thought we lost Chris. Chris stopped responding after that thing didn't run through. All right, we'll continue here. Radio Row live here in New Orleans. And there's been some new comments made by the general manager of the Astros, Dana Brown. He has spoken about Alex Bregman. Wait till you hear what he had to say there. And then our favorite, talking about Jose Altuve in left field. You don't want to miss any of that. That's next right here live on The Drive.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Oh, Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value plus CRV. Limit 3 free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit 2 packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit 4 items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Live from New Orleans, Flight by Yuengling presents Sports Radio 610 on Radio Row. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
That's right. Welcome back in. The drive is live right here on Radio Row. And also want to send a shout out to our good friends Flight by Yuengling as they present Sports Radio 610 right here on Radio Row. Also, Low T Center as they also support us here as well. And I can't wait. And we got a guest coming up here next segment. He will join us in the exclusive furniture hot seat. He will be right there with us, Nate Boyer. That's coming up here in about 10 or 15 minutes, so stay tuned for that. Also, you can catch us, and many of you are catching us, on YouTube and Twitch, our live stream, Mo Karam Entry Lawyers. You can watch us live at Radio Row on the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers video stream. So we appreciate all of those who have come to help us roll here on Radio Row. All right, Clint, Dana Brown got out to talking again.
Did he? That's always hey, entertaining.
Hey, Dana Brown is becoming my favorite. Just my
sound
favorite.
Bite? Hey,
favorite
sound bite,
yeah,
huh?
What's he going to say? What's DB about to say?
I mean, He's making a name for himself.
Oh, quickly, baby. He said he just kept it real on Ryan Preston.
I kept it real as a true professional myself.
There it is, man. It's a true professional, but he's just keeping it real in there. All right, well, it sounds like he kept it real again on Alex Bregman. This Alex Bregman situation has continued to roll and roll and roll, Clint. And here is Dana Brown, the latest. He speaks to the media today. This is him talking about where they are on the Alex Bregman situation.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we're still having conversations about Bregman internally, and I could probably leave it at that.
That's what I said. They're no longer in talks with Bregman or Boris, but really just within themselves, just internally. And then, you know, he also spoke about him in the past tense, right? He said we moved on. And we lost Bregman, and we And we lost Tucker, but we gained Paredes and we gained Walker. Like talking about him like in a past tense, Clint. And it does, man. It gets the feel, and it seems like, it, at least from him, that they have moved on, and it's just conversation. It doesn't seem like Alex Bregman is coming. Every time he talks, I feel more and more the thought of Alex Bregman is not coming to the Astros, and it doesn't seem like they're in it.
Well, I don't know what people want to hear from Dana Brown, like what you expect to hear from Dana Brown. Like I think they've made the offer. They stood firm with the offer. And Bregman, if he wants to play games, if Boris wants to play games, I don't know why they need to continue to have a back and forth with Bregman. They know what the offer is, and Bregman doesn't want to take a year to year average pay cut. And the offer is a flat out pay cut on a year to year basis. And so, if you want to entertain that, and not necessarily entertain it, if you want to accept it, come on back. If not, we're not going to play ball and be this dog and pony show for you and Boris and. To go out and try to get more from somebody else or try to get a longer contract from somebody else, it is what it is. And I just don't think that's going to change.
No.
And the Astros are clearly not interested in pursuing and chasing Alex Bregman, which, again, to your point, like
– they've made the moves to not do it.
Right. I mean, you feel good about the moves that you made. Is it Bregman and Tucker? No, it's not. But you feel good about where you're at and the way you responded to both of those guys being gone. And – to go pursue a guy that now found out the market isn't what he thought it was going to be for himself, I think would be silly. I love the kind of the stance of, hey man, we there's not a lot of talking for us to do. I mean, everybody involved knows the cards that are on the table, and we'll see where the cards fall.
And I got to give him credit, like because I think there's some times, and I've said this, and I wonder when you hear these reports of Bregman coming, like what's the plan here? It feels like Dana Brown has a plan and has stuck to that sucker.
Yep.
And now, hey, if you want to come back and we can maybe do something else, you know, but he's not about to, you know, break his back to try to figure this thing out, which I give him respect of. We've heard a lot of other stuff around. He hadn't moved off of it. Like, the way he's made it sound was like, as you said, ain't no talking to be done.
Yeah.
This is what we did. We moved on. Hey, we've got something else. Now, I don't know if you love this part of it. Dana spoke about his second baseman, his Hall of Fame second baseman, potentially playing in left field. Mm. This is
– we still doing this?
This is Dana Brown talking about Jose Altuve and how he looked in left field.
Yeah, so I walked out one day. I saw him taking some fly balls, and beat me being a scout from coming out of a scouting background. I was like, look, this guy looks pretty good out there. And we all know he could run, and I just saw the fun and joy on his face like a little kid. You know, he was out there having some fun, so that's always a good thing.
The fun, and I walked out and saw him catching, taking some.
Hey, but you hear Dana though? They didn't want to slide in his credentials real quick, in that little.
The old scouted me.
The old scouted me, and that scouting eye your boys got right here. I looked at him. I said, "Damn, he looks pretty good out there now."
Joy, man. Altuve's running around out there in that open field. Now, happier than I'll get out.
Now, Clint, the part, that's the part that makes me that's weird to me is, like, I would have thought like the reason that Altuve would even consider, or they would even consider, hey, let's move to left field is completely due to, oh, Alex Bregman's here. Alex Bregman's here. We got to find space. We got to find space for this lineup. Now, he's talking in a way like, hey, man, shoot, we've moved on. Are we going to be seeing Altuve in left field regardless of if Alex Bregman is on the team or not? Like, or is that going to be another position we're going to start to see him in?
Well, I thought it was an Alex Bregman. Like, I thought it was a plan to allow Alex Bregman back in the building if those stars end up aligning. But shortly after this all surfaced, there was a report that the Astros were interested, I believe, in – is Jorge Posada, is that the right word? What was the guy's name?
No, Jorge Polanco.
Polanco, there you go. Wrong P, just didn't finish it right, boys. But there you go, another infielder. And that just leads you to believe that the plan is to – it's not Bregman-centric. It's any infielder, any bat, really, they want to give themselves some flexibility. If that bat comes around and it happens to be an infielder, then Altuve can fill the void in the outfield and continue to keep his bat in the lineup. So I would like to think it was Bregman-centric, but clearly it's not.
Clearly the way they're talking and putting him out there, whether Bregman is here or not, we're gonna see some Altuve in left field. Who needs to get on the field at second base?
I'll be honest with you. I want to see it.
You're intrigued to see it?
Absolutely. I will tune in and see it for damn sure. No question about it.
I don't know, man.
You know, he was out there having some fun.
Yeah, I know he's having some fun. Who else is having some fun out there? Who else can we throw out there? Let's see. Let's see what Yiner can do out there. He can have some fun out there. I'll put him in center. This is wild. We'll see what happens there. But it looks like, at least coming from Dana Brown, the Bregman situation stands. I hope it just ends. I want some sort of closure to this, where he signs, whatever. This Bregman thing, I think Dana's over it too. Shoot, yeah. I'm tired of having to answer questions about this thing. So we'll see what happens there. And it looks like it is very, 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 very plausible that we'll see some Jose Altuve in the outfield. Coming up, we will continue rolling here, right here live, and we'll hopefully get a chance to speak to a really, 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 really great individual, Nate Boyer, former long snapper and former member of the United States Army Green Berets. He will join us coming up. University of Texas, we'll hear from him as well, and we'll continue as we roll in here live on The Drive Radio Row.
Live from New Orleans, Flight by Yingling presents Sports Radio 610 on Radio Row. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, looking forward to speaking to Nate Boyer. Here he is as he's walking up, and he joins us in the he'll be joining us coming up. This is the first person we've had in this exclusive furniture hot seat right here. This lazy boy right here. I feel like you think he's gonna rock back? You think he's gonna, as soon as he sit in?
Probably get comfortable.
Go ahead and get comfortable. Get in there, Nate. Get comfortable. There we go. Yeah, see, does he rock back? No. See,
there it was.
Yeah, rock, yeah, it is. There it is. There it is. Joining us, former NFL player, long snapper for the Seahawks, and played a little ball at the University of Texas as well. The people here in Houston. Horns. There you go. Luckily, our producer is not in today, who's an Aggie, so he might.
Well, he was there. You know, he saw what happened the day after Thanksgiving or whatever that was.
Yeah, he was actually there, Nate. Yeah, he was actually there.
Yeah, yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. He was there with a little lighter pockets.
Yeah, he was there, and they forced him to leave after the third quarter. He got out and bounced right there.
Oh, boy.
All right, also Green Beret. Also, before we get started, I know I speak for Clint and everybody here. We are so thankful for serving your country and everything that you've done to allow people like us to live and live our lives. So we are very, very appreciative of that. And thank you for everything you've done for people like us.
My honor. I needed it. I needed to be a part of something and to kind of find my purpose. And I felt like I hadn't done much for others in my life at that time. And so it was. But I appreciate you saying that.
I'm sure you've talked about this a lot. What was the moment though that is there a specific moment that led you to say, man, I've got to do this. I've got to do something.
Yes. So I was 23, and I went to – I was not in a good place, mentally, physically, all kinds of things. And I woke up on my buddy's couch, hungover, and on the coffee table was this Time magazine. And the cover of it said the tragedy in Sudan. And the article, at least the one I was reading, was about – the genocide in the Darfur. And this was in 2004, right? 300,000 people being killed, millions displaced. Most of the men were off fighting or had been killed. It's women and children just flooding these refugee camps, and they're understaffed. So I called all these NGOs like, hey, you know, can I come help? Like Doctors Without Borders, Child Fund, Catholic Relief Services, and they were all saying, we appreciate your passion, but you don't have a college degree. You don't have any special skills. What are you going to do? I'm like, well, I mean, I've worked construction. I worked on a fishing boat. I've done all kinds of odd jobs. I could figure there'll be some kind of manual labor thing I can help with, I promise you. And they were like, well, it's just not that simple. And I said, I'm just going to go anyway. So I went to the travel agency because we didn't buy stuff online back then, to the AAA, and I bought a plane ticket to go to Chad. And I flew over there, and I talked my way onto a UN flight and got out to the refugee camps, and I volunteered for a couple of months. And that completely changed my life, my perspective. For the first time in my life, I felt in a weird way at home, but that because people were excited and needed me, you know, excited to see me in the morning, like the kids come play soccer with us and just simple stuff, passing out food rations and helping in the medical centers with what little skills I had. And then my last week there, I got malaria, and this local family put me up, and they wouldn't take a dollar from me. Mm. And they put this radio next to the cot, and the only station that came through was the BBC News, and the second battle of Fallujah was going on. And I'm listening to these brave young men and women, they were mostly Marines in that battle, that were risking their lives to fight for these people in Iraq. And I just said, you know what? That's next. When I come home, I'm going to join the military. So I came home, found out about the Special Forces and their mission, which had a humanitarian side to what they're doing, beyond kicking doors down and, you know, doing bad things to worse people. But it just, like, it all clicked in a kind of a quick time frame. So I went from this person who just didn't have any belief in themselves and didn't feel good about themselves at all to enlisting and trying to be a Green Beret. But it was through that trip to Africa. That's a long story, but
no,
it's a good question because that's the biggest turning point in my life was that's 20 years ago now, 21 years ago now. But
how about the process of becoming a Green Beret? Like what was that like, and how does that compare to your days playing football and preparing to play a game kind of?
Yeah,
thing?
I mean, that also a great question because a lot of times people are like, "There's no way football is as tough as being a Green Beret," and I'm like, "Well, it's different because there's a lot more sort of God-given athleticism or whatever you want to call it that is required to play football at a high level, right?" Whereas in the Special Forces, it's a lot more of just that mental toughness. You just, no matter what, just you cannot quit. And you want to all the time because it's super hard and it's long. The training, you know, from basic training all the way through earning your Green Beret is like 2 years. Mm. And SF stands for Special Forces. It also stands for Suckfest because that's what it is. Like every day you just like, oh, I don't want to do this again. And you just got to. But it's all worth it once you get done. But it is very challenging. And you do a lineup at the beginning of all the guys trying out for it. You could pick which people you think are going to make it, and you might be right one out of five times.
Did you just point to me?
because there's no way. But he would do it. This would be the guy.
No, I'm
and
not.
You'd be like. He made it.
that dude did it.
What was the
most difficult thing you had to do, or the most memorable thing story? I mean, surely you got some crazy stories about the training. What was the wildest?
I mean, the most difficult for me was SEER school, Survival Evasion Resistance Escape. If you've ever seen G.I. Jane, they do like it's like a mock POW camp towards the end of the movie. Similar thing because. When you're tired and you haven't ate anything and you're just freezing, we did this in February, you know, and you start to believe that it's real. you know what I mean? Even though it's simulation.
Mental as much as anything.
Yeah.
Right?
And it feels very real. I mean, they're whooping on you and they know all these things about you and they're interrogating you and it's crazy. Right. And so that was like, that was the toughest part. Just getting through that. And, you know, you want to tap out, but you can't. Most memorable though was, earlier in the training, it was right after selection. So selection is like a three and a half week long. Every day you've got a big rucksack on your back and you're navigating through, you know, the North Carolina sticks, basically, trying to find this stick in the ground that's got a grid coordinate on it with a compass and a map, and that's all you got, right? And then you got to go find the next one. And it's long, it's hard, it's a lot of people don't make the time standard because it is challenging. So getting done with that, and then they're calling out names and putting you in these different formations, and you don't know what it means at the end of the selection. You know one of them's good and one of them's not, right? And I'm standing there, and I'm looking around. I'm thinking, like, I don't know if that guy I don't know if this is a good line. And you look over here, you're like, well, no, that guy's been crushing it. So, but then this they had these older Green Berets, veterans, walking around in civilian clothes, you know. And they're kind of walking around, like, assessing everybody. And this dude walks up and, like, whispers in my ear, welcome to the Brotherhood. And when he said that, I just got chills, and I was like, oh, man, I almost start crying, you know what I mean? It was a moment that just, like, whew.
Oh, that's great.
Even though you don't – you still got a year plus of training. There's no guarantee from that. But you got a better shot. Once you get through selection, you're like, all right,
also,
I can do this.
Nate Boyer joins us, former NFL player, also a member of the University of Texas, came – is a Longhorn, as you just heard him at the start of this, Hook'em Horns, as he joins us here on The Drive, right here live on Radio Row. What led you to Austin? As somebody, a California kid, grew up in California, what led you to Austin?
Oh, man. It was a great city. I'd only been there once, you know. Part of it was the school, and part of it was the team. I never played football in my life, and it was a huge regret.
You never played football in your life?
I never played football. I played baseball. I played basketball. I played soccer.
Well, hold on. When did you start playing football?
When I was 29. Naturally. You know what, though? If I would have played when I was younger, my dad told me this, and he's so right. If I would have played when I was younger, because I was a good athlete, never a great athlete. I was like sixth man on the basketball team and, you know, those kind of things. Like, I was first team all league in baseball, but as a utility because I played every random position and whatever. He was like, if you would have played in high school, maybe you would have done okay, but you would have realized how impossible this is, you know, or you would have thought that and you just wouldn't have tried. You wouldn't have tried out. But because you had that naivety, which isn't always a bad thing to have a little bit, you were like, eh, screw it. I mean, worse is going to happen if they get cut.
Yeah,
and I didn't. You know, I ended up working out. And not that I didn't prepare for it, but it's a good point. I never thought of it that way, but when he told me that, I was like, you're right. I think he's absolutely right. So if I had, when I was younger, I wouldn't have tried. But I wanted to go somewhere with a legendary program, even though we weren't very good when I was there. We were 8-5, 9-4 days before it got real bad. And now they're really good, which is awesome. But sort of the end of Mac's career, Mac Brown's career is when I was there. But anyway, yeah, I loved Austin. You know, I remember the first time I went there. Well, second time I went there. First time I went there, I just partied on 6th Street. Second time I went there to look at the school.
Did you have a spot? Did you have a bar?
There's not one. There's too many. There's too many. But I do have a little stake in a place called El Cockfight in Austin. So if you're in Austin, go to El Cockfight.
I'm sorry, it's called
El Cockfight. Yeah, it's not a gay bar. However, a lot of people think it is.
El
and it's
Cock
all good. We love everybody, man. We don't care.
El Cockfight, not a gay
look,
bar. Gotcha.
To find out, you got to go. It's open to interpretation right now.
Exactly.
But you got to go.
And you
I'm intrigued.
Never know about Austin. I married a Longhorn, so
there you go. Come in.
Yeah, hopefully she's not been there, Nate. I'm just being honest with you. On the outside,
well, we got a big
in.
Neon sign that says "World's Greatest Cock" when you walk in there.
Oh, like, well, I mean. Again, I hope she hadn't been there.
Now, was that you? Did you push for that sign?
No,
Nate?
I didn't. I did nothing to do with the design. I was a silent investor. Obviously, I'm not silent now, but.
Look, the next time we go, we'll go in there together.
You
got to
go.
We'll experience it. That'll be
good. But I'll tell you real quick. I showed up in Austin. I'm in my dress blues. It's my last several months in the military, and I was wanting to get into school, and I didn't have great high school grades, but I was like, oh, you know, I'm just going to show up in the admissions office with my Green Beret on and uniform. They'll help me.
Yeah.
They'll let me know what I need to do to get in. And I get in the taxi, because this is before Uber and Lyft, and the taxi driver's taking me up there. And, you know, taxi drivers, they're half of them are crazy, not all of them, but they're out there, dudes. And this guy was hilarious. And he was like, have you ever been to Austin? And I was like, yeah, once, but, you know, I didn't really spent real time here. And he's like, oh, man, you're going to love it. All the cowboys smoke pot and all the hippies carry guns. And I was like, he's like, everybody just kind of gets along out here. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So
he wasn't too far off, was
he? Once he said that, I was like, I'm in.
I'm in, huh?
Yeah. Hey, Nate, tell us about MVP, man. And I know, you know, you guys are doing some big things there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Emerging Vets and Players, co-founded with Jay Glazer almost, I guess, 9 years ago now. And what we do is we bring together combat vets and former professional athletes, and we help them find purpose and identity when they lose a uniform. Look, the battlefield and the ball field are different places. No one's ever – some people do, but no one's realistically comparing going to war with playing a game.
Yep.
But the locker room, the camaraderie, the identity with that uniform, the structure. There's so many things that are similar. Honestly, the sacrifice. It's a different kind of sacrifice, but if you want to be elite, elite athlete, there's a lot of sacrifice that goes into that. Mm-hmm. But then it's over, and a lot of times, you know, the average NFL career is 3 years. You're 25 years old, and you feel like you've peaked and you'll never be great again. That's tough, you know, to be on that pedestal and come down. And vets feel that way too. Not so much because, you know, maybe they were in the limelight or whatever, but you had this strong connection to a sense of purpose, and you were a part of something important. You had a lot of responsibility and all that. And then you get out, and you don't even know where to start. You're trying to figure out maybe a corporate job or whatever. You're missing that element of, I mean, honestly, the adrenaline, but also just the camaraderie and the connection to something that's bigger than you, you know, that's truly bigger than you. And so they have mutual respect between the two. They look up to each other, you know, kind of heroes to each other. So we brought them together, recreating that locker room. And really, it's just a network of people that are helping build each other up, got each other's back. We meet up in the gym weekly and train for 45 minutes or so, and then we huddle up and just sit around like we're doing and just talk. You know, sometimes it's just a conversation like this. Sometimes somebody's going through something pretty heavy, and we rally around that too. But it's really just about rebuilding the locker room, that community. That's really what MVP is all about. There's a movie that I directed called MVP.
Okay.
That's out on Prime and Apple TV and all that. If people want to learn more, go to the website, go to vetsandplayers.org, but also check the movie out. And if you're in New Orleans, if you guys are still here Friday, are you?
We will.
Friday night, Molly's at the market. We have an MVP party. We're going to have vets and athletes bartending back there. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a blast, and it is free. It's an open invite.
Look out now!
I like that now.
But
I'll
make sure you guys, if there's a line, I'll pull you guys around.
I like that. Nate, we know you're a busy man and a lot to get to. We certainly appreciate you stopping by. A lot of people on the text line. Great interview.
Hell yeah!
Liked hearing from you, and we appreciate again everything you've done, and we appreciate your service.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Nate Boyer, who joins the drive in the exclusive furniture hot seat, and he did it well. He did it well. Coming up as
warmed
we continue,
got a good warmed up.
As we continue here on the drive, something that seemed to bother Texans fans, and something that Texans fans didn't even really consider. Clint has a different take on it. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals, and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.